What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, LinkedIn, Instagram, Kick, of course, everybody's favorite website. We're live there, too.
Dentist's office. Your boss's
the car
taxi TV.
Party.
Yeah, taxi TV is back. That's very exciting.
Gas station TV would love. Dream. Yeah. That's a dream.
Maybe
stream right there.
You are listening later wherever you get your podcasts, if show you, so you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and dog-free versions as well at patreon.com/comicbookclub. And guys, we're pretty excited here. It's summer. Pete's hot. He's got the t-shirt on. Justin's hot. He's got the t-shirt on.
I'm on vacation.
I'm chilling out down here. I'm feeling
Yeah, what's the temp? What's it like where you are? What's happening?
I don't know.
Are it's you like in a sub basement?
This is the most boring way of starting the show, but I will tell you, I told Pete beforehand, the weather inside of my house is like a day behind. So it's very warm outside, but right now it's nice and cool inside. So tomorrow it'll be hot.
Wow, what a weird idea.
It's a first time off,
weather inside your house?
I don't know.
A storm front coming in? That's called emotions,
yeah, from
Alex.
Over
that's
here,
emotions.
We're getting some glare coming in.
Wow.
Is that a good weatherman voice?
Really good. Clearly a fan of Jason Bateman's performance in DTF.
So hey, don't we have an amazing guest to get to?
Yes, and it's not Jason Bateman, sadly. But it is one of our favorite guests. We haven't talked to him for a very long time here on the show. Very excited to have him back to talk about, among other things, Amazing Spider-Man, which he has been crushing it on. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Kelly!
Woo-hoo! Hello!
Hello, gentlemen. It is very good to see you guys.
So good to see you, Joe.
So good to see you. Welcome back.
It has been a while. Thank you so much.
Yeah. How's it been? How's everything going with you, Joe?
Oh, you know, the world is completely fine and nothing exciting has happened since the last time I saw you.
Joe, we're reading your post-it notes and we know you got a lot of big plans behind you.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
to
I
change
just literally
that
smushed them all down because I was like, I don't think people can see them just in case.
Yes.
No, life is good. Life is good. I've got, you know, all my complaints, all my problems are self-generated. So.
Congrats.
That's fantastic. Dream.
Well, listen. Let's talk about Amazing Spider-Man. And as I said, we've been absolutely loving your run on it. There's a lot to dig into, particularly with the currently running Death Spiral storyline. But I want to take a big step back because I don't want to speak for you guys, Justin and Pete, but everybody has strong feelings about Spider-Man. I often jokingly call it one of the worst jobs in comics because everybody is very passionate about what you have to do with Spider-Man. But it really feels to me like you have cracked the code of what needs to go into a Spider-Man book, giving this balance of humor, the ongoing cast, figuring out how to push the story forward. What is that for you? Like, what is the formula, at least from your perspective, to make a Spider-Man comic work that you're trying to tackle issue by issue?
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. I'm just hanging on by my fingernails every week. No, it's, you know, first of all, I love the character, right? Like, he's my childhood favorite superhero, right? So, you know, no question there. I really care about, like, the heart. More than anything, you know, it's like Peter as a character, not just the power responsibility part, but what does it really mean to try to be like the moral center of the Marvel universe? And how do you stretch that? And how do you mess with it? And how do you mess with audience expectations? It's the same stuff that I think everybody's trying to do. But for me, it's I do channel a lot of my own stuff. Like I know that people, it's like a try hardy slash, you know, people mock you on the internet for self inserts. But the truth is like, I feel like I've related to Peter Parker my whole life. So to take that stuff, the fears you feel, the sense of inadequacy, even if you've got the superpowers, to put that in that book, that's, I could do that. You know, I'm brought up Roman Catholic. I understand.
Yeah. I can that's the ultimate training for Spider-Man. So you yeah, have exactly. Your Hellgate is a neighbor that is bringing bad vibes to you. And you're fleeing.
Just will not put their garbage away. It's so frustrating.
Well, because that's what has struck me about your run is it's stretching far. It's stretching a lot. It's pulling in so many different directions, but keeping like the flashbacks, the black and white flashbacks you've been doing. I think it feels like it's been part of the canon forever, but it's not. It's something that you put in there, and it's first off injecting so much original emotionality to the character that we haven't seen in a long time. But it's a perfect device for Spider-Man, someone who is haunted by guilt constantly.
Right. Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I love that stuff. It was funny because when we started talking about that, I had asked Nick Lowe, you know, has anybody ever looked at him as a, you know, what, a middle schooler? You know, mm-hmm. like have we know him from high school and we've seen him as a baby being delivered to, you know, May and Ben. And he said, not really. It's a pretty much a blank slate. And I feel like a lot of the firmament for who we become, right, as people, gets laid in that early adolescent period. Yeah. So it just felt like a real ripe time to start to explore in a way that doesn't violate anything. You know, like I think, you know, like we all know the Uncle Ben part of it, right? We all know the, oh, I didn't stop the robber.
Right.
But there's more to it, right? Like, I don't know if any of you have gone to therapy, but as somebody who's had to go to therapy in his lifetime, it's not just like that one time that guy kicked sand in my face.
That's so funny.
That's it. You know, it's like you go through everything. All this stuff. Yeah, exactly. That was it. You go through all this stuff. So it was a really great opportunity, I thought, to, you know, delve into him as a character a little bit more, kind of understand the pillars of like, where does the guilt come from? Where does the feeling come from? You know, also I went back and read those early books when I got the job, the first, whatever, 30, 40, 50 books. And it was like, he was so angry. He was angry all the time. Like, we don't generally think of Peter Parker as angry. He was so pissed. And it was like, why is he so pissed? And part of it is, you know, the stories that Stan put him in, but part of it is like, oh yeah, I was an orphan and I don't know my parents. I've got these aged parents. I'm trying to figure my life out. And it just seemed like rich ground to explore. So I'm glad that it works. And then of course the beginning of the run with Pepe doing those flashbacks and the way he does acting, it's like unbelievable.
So
like, to get, you know, his young May and Peter, holy crap. Like, so good. So, you know, I got very lucky to get to have Pepe and JR Jr. And like, that's how the run kicks off, right? It's a new classic, an old classic. You know, it's embarrassment of riches, art-wise.
I don't want to cut you off or anything, but I want to start by saying just thank you for all your work. Big fan going back to a lot of your early stuff. I'm just so happy that you're still doing it at such a great level. It's just a real pleasure to kind of get to talk to you again. What I am worried about as a Spider-Man fan is how you feel about MJ. You know, there's
by the
a
way,
big...
did I mention anything about people having really strong feelings Spider-Man?
Yeah. Dude, nobody ever asked that question.
Yeah.
I don't know. Wait, MJ is Mary Jane.
There could be a lot of MJs.
Starting off scary here. Starting off scary.
I think he means Mr. J. Jonah Jameson.
Nope. Definitely don't. Don't mean that.
It's not his relationship to Michael Jackson. It's well, having read back into all that stuff, I was actually really struck about how powerful Gwen is. You know, I had forgotten he was literally ready to propose to her. So kind of going back into that land, I was sort of like, oh, who is this redheaded hussy? Like, I was kind of like, I'm Gwen.
Wow,
like,
you are playing with fire, Joe.
I know. This is, occasionally we say court the controversy.
Yes, no, exactly.
I love Mary Jane. I love her as a character. By the time I came on the book, obviously the stuff with Venom was already kicking around. So, you know, I've walked into a new status quo. Obviously, all the stuff that Zed did, you know, led up to my run too. You know, she's an awesome character, and it's like all these characters evolve over the course of time. You know, I like everybody else, I have strong feelings too. I could play Monday Morning Quarterback and sort of go, well, why did they do this? Why did they do that? Should they have ever gotten married in the first place? Like, there's a lot of things that you can pick at.
But now you're the Sunday afternoon quarterback.
That down the quarterback.
You're the quarterback.
The ball is really
the calls are known as a quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. the ball is really specific that I got handed. So, you know, she's certainly in the book. Obviously, there's stuff that goes on between them in Death Spiral that you're going to see quite a bit of now that, you know, the Peter knows for real because he didn't know that she was Venom. So that was a very fun scene to write. So now they're back together. They're on an adventure. You know, we'll see what happens. But she's, you know, she's critical to the cast. So it's just trying to weave her in an organic fashion because you just can't hit the brakes on the last X amount of years of what people have been doing. You know?
Well, I want to ask you a question that's maybe playing even more with fire, but I've really been enjoying the relationship between Peter and the alien girl that he met when he went off in space. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on her name.
No, it's okay. Ray. Nobody. Ray. Yeah.
But there's a lot of heat there, and it's fun, and it's a cute, very different relationship.
To some people.
Sure, I'll just speak for myself, but... given there have been a long history of iconic Spider-Man girlfriends, so that almost feels part and parcel to the character. Like back when they broke up, part of the idea was, hey, we could have him date a bunch of other people. What is involved in creating a new Spider-Man girlfriend? What's the thought process that goes on there?
Oh, well, definitely immediately assuming that at least 80% people will hate. So that's that is part of it. It's funny. Ray has evolved even in the short time that you guys have sort of seen her. Originally, it was sort of the idea of like, oh, I've been chucked into space. It's kind of like I find myself stranger in a strange land. It's kind of a relationship of convenience that was then going to track back to Earth. But she's such a fun, like effervescent character on her own that I don't want her to be limited to just being like the girlfriend, like the weird alien girlfriend. So yeah. She's kind of stood up as a different type of sort of different archetype in my head, but she has just a different way about her. Like she'll happily just run up to you and kiss you on the mouth. Like that's who she is because she's so sort of wild and not wild in that way, but expressive with her emotions because she comes from a place that's so repressive. Yeah. And Peter, you know, I think he enjoys that attention to some degree and also knows it's not going to last. Right. So now that they're back on Earth, what is that going to turn into?
Yeah,
because they can only live together in this tiny New York apartment for so long. So, but you know, that being said, romance is critical, I think, to Peter's life. And I know that there are people that are sort of like MJ or die.
Yeah.
And I get that. I get it. I'm looking at you, Pete. I totally get it. When they are not officially together, if we don't have these other components, I feel like we're just missing you know, a lever to press in Peter's life.
Yeah.
And having that bounce off of MJ and what that really means. And they have such a deep friendship in addition to any romantic potential that, you know, it's just such good fodder for the soap opera to see what happens. And even when I did like a fill in a little while ago and they, you know, bumped into each other at a little getaway spot, like that was so fun to do.
Yeah.
You know, even though I know she was with, you know, with Paul, which is its own.
I can't believe you're coming in here saying that name.
Don't bring up that guy. He doesn't count at all.
We're a Paul podcast. Yeah,
no, we
like
are
Paul.
Not.
That's
no.
Just two out of like three. I do want to ask, there's a related question here in the comments. This is from Derek Mainhart. He says, the space adventure was wild. Is there a version where that went on longer?
That's a great question. It could have definitely gone on a little bit longer. We thought about, originally it was going to be 6 months even for both tracks. And we decided that didn't quite work for a couple of reasons. I happily could have spun off that group into their own thing, but no, it was meant to be a 6-issue arc. You know, I'm still in that headset to some degree. I still think of these things as 5 or 6-issue chunks. So, and it was an experiment. Honestly, we thought, could both of those artists, you know, could Pepe and JR Jr. due monthly essentially for six instead of trying to do the biweekly and just see what that cadence was like. And it was obviously really challenging for everybody. So, yeah, I would have loved for it to go longer. And there's going to be more of it, you know, like those characters, Hellgate's out there, you know, his sage is out there. Like there's plenty of reasons for that stuff to reappear. So, and the aliens are on Earth.
And let's talk about the Earthbound side of that equation, because I loved the sort of wild adventure that Peter was on and sort of him finally escaping all of these things. And everyone on Earth was like, we're just going to fill in. And they were like, oh, my God, this is so hard in every facet. And you talk about inheriting the continuity. And I feel like Green Goblin's one of those characters like, oh, man, what do I do with this? What do I do with this mess? And you're coming in at a time where you looking forward to addressing the Green Goblin situation, or were you like, I got to do something here?
Oh, yeah. Once you have a ticking bomb, right now he's Chekhov's goblin, right? It's like, yeah. Now you're just sitting there going like, there's going to be a goblin eventually. Like, what's going to happen? And the tension of that undergirds so much that you do with Norman. So trying to see him, you know, basically because of his own ego and hubris, be like, I could fill in for Peter. That would be something he'd want me to do, and then just get his ass handed to him over and over as a result, was a ton of fun for me. But I think it's really interesting to take a guy who has been like expunged of his sins, right? It has to have air quotes because I don't, you know, it means a metaphysical thing, right? Mm-hmm. But he's still like an egotistical dude. He's quick to anger. He's very broken. You know, like we started doing some of the flashbacks to his life because it's almost like being in the suit kind of evokes it. It's almost like he doesn't have a choice because the more he extends himself to help others, he also looks inwards. You know,
and that felt like the most, sorry to interrupt you, but that felt like the most painful part for him. He was like, oh, this self-reflection is a nightmare. Why is this part of it? And it feels so true that it is. And it felt like his ultimate failure was like, he thought he was going to be good at it, but he actually can't hang with any of that part of it.
Absolutely. And that was sort of the goal of the sort of Earth story was to illustrate, you know, almost like in absentia, show the sort of outline around Spider-Man and just show when he's gone, what that hole looks like for members of the cast. So, yeah, I love doing the scene with Norman and Jonah, because it's like the two worst fathers on the planet, you know, like talking about their surrogate son, but both realizing that like, we're better men because of this kid who's not here. That was awesome, you know. So I love doing that stuff, and then everybody else just trying to step up and do what they think is right, because that's what he inspires. You know, that's part of why I love this character so much. You know, it's like Superman is inspirational in a different kind of way, but you know, he's like indestructible. Mm-hmm. You know, Peter bleeds, like he is bleeding all the time. Like he can get broken, and so to have that guy keep getting up and trying to lift the unliftable weight and all that sort of stuff that he does, that's what we love him for. So to show just how the people around him respond to crisis when he's not there, that's part of it.
I am curious to go back to something you said about Norman being the goblin ticking time bomb. I mean, certainly that's how we feel as a reader. And this is more of a broad question. You've been doing this for a while. How do you feel about the gravitational pull of those characters that they sort of have to return to even at some point?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And it's so funny you use that term gravitational pull, because when we talk about Mary Jane, I literally use that term. It's like she is a, you know, a celestial body who's so big that you feel like, oh, any of these other characters I might introduce are just going to get absorbed by her gravity, right? Like they can't. So you need somebody that's of that stature, and that's very challenging. With
like a Spider-Man,
like a Spider-Man as the other romance, eh? You know, maybe it's 21st century. So do they always need to get reset? I don't think so. I mean, I think that I think we've all read comics long enough that there are two wolves in us, right? We want something new and we want what we love. Like it's challenging. It's a dichotomy that you just have to kind of keep going back and forth between, certainly on the writing side. So I find myself going like, I want to see the Sinister Six guys. I can't wait. But I know I shouldn't start with them, you know, because for me, then it's going to feel like a nothing burger. Like I don't want to just have Doc Ock as a throwaway. I want to have a real story for him. So I messed around with all this new stuff. And now as we're coming out of, you know, the first year plus, you know, maybe we'll start to see some of the classics because now there's kind of room for them, like the appetite grows. But it's, yeah, we tried something new, and I'm glad that the space stuff landed for people. And now we'll go back and we'll be on Earth for a while and see how that, well, be back on Earth for the indefinite future.
I think that's a good transition to start talking about Death Spiral. But before we get to it, I do want to mention that every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris. He works at a place called Shift. He creates a cocktail based around our guest or the book that we're talking about. And this week he created Is Joe Kelly in a Spiral, which is a drink that has rye whiskey, Amaro, lemon juice, strawberry syrup, club soda, sparkling water, and fresh strawberries. And I'm going to skip some of the stuff, but it is inspired partially by the Death Spiral mashup of Venom and Carnage. We got the seeing the black Amaro for the symbiote, a little lemon for sharp whip, red strawberries for either the sweetness of love or the blood of carnage, whichever you prefer. Ooh. And club soda is like webbing, maybe? Could be.
Well, yeah. Sure. Definitely.
Yeah, I feel like the drink could just be renamed as Yes. Like I'm always in a spiral about something. Yes.
Well, there you go. There's the cocktail. Let's talk about the book, which is Death Spiral. Again, we've been loving this crossover. And I got to say, as somebody who doesn't always love the symbiote stuff, is not always into that part of the Spider-Man world. Again, I thank you. And I know it's working with Al Ewing and Charles Soule and all the amazing artists you're working with. Have really come up with this fun mix of three people at very different places with Peter Parker coming in from space, being out of his element, thinking, you know, not having pushed away everybody's life, but Ben Reilly doing it for him, Mary Jane being Venom, Eddie Brock being Carnage. So they're all like out of place. And then you throw this guy Torment into the mix. I'm just kind of laying this out for our listeners in case you don't know, but we're knowing that all of these characters were in these weird places or different places for them. Is that where it started? Is that how it started to feel like, okay, we got to figure out something to do with them right now? Or where did the idea come from?
Very, very shortly after I came on, they had already sort of said like, hey, we're going to do a crossover. Like it was kind of planned already. And I was like, oh, cool. When is it? Like, well, after I get back from space. Like, no, it's like 5 seconds later. So, which kind of worked for me for what I want to do, right? Because if the setup of the first bunch of arcs is sort of like Peter's afraid of losing things, that's like a childhood trauma for him. And then, oh my, he lost everything. And then what happens and is sort of focused on strength and getting stronger. So now he's back to Earth, and even Earth doesn't resemble what he expected, right? Because there's problems with, you know, Mary Jane and, like you said, Eddie's carnage, like all the chaos. It really just kind of lends itself to that psychological infrastructure I'm trying to build for him. But we knew there was going to be a crossover. You know, I found out about the Carnage book and the Mary Jane as Venom, and then sat down with Al and Charles, and we just sort of cooked some stuff up. What was really fun, especially in the context of a Spidey book, is that because Charles was doing serial killer stuff with Carnage, it just kicked the door open to like, oh, we can like do darker stuff and have a body count that maybe you wouldn't typically do in a Spidey story. And that's always exciting because I have a dark, sick puppy. So
we know that now.
Yeah,
we know that now.
Yeah, you guys know.
Well, I conversely to the symbiote stuff, I do really kind of dig those darker Spider-Man storylines that they used to happen a lot more back in the day, like the City Eater and the gang wars. I know they had another gang war recently, and this kind of has vibes with that. And I'll put a spoiler warning here, but right at the top, you kill off Shocker in the previous issue, classic character Shocker. Why was he the first to go?
Poor Herman. Rip Herman. Yeah. We were looking for, you know, we did want a legitimate body count. And I mean, the alpha issue, literally somebody's getting killed on every page. I mean, but there are characters we don't know necessarily. And so we wanted somebody of import. And once, as you point out, like once symbiotes are involved, it's like, well, how is this serial killer going to wrangle any of these guys? he's got to have Sonics or he's got to have fire. So then Sonics came up and we're like, could we kill Shocker? Is that a thing? and in fairness to everybody, you know, everybody who would be mad at me for that, I love Shocker. Like, Shocker is one of those characters that, like, I cannot explain why. I love that costume. He's just like, I grew up with that character. I love that character so much. So it was definitely like one of these, like, ooh, we're gonna hurt ourselves for the betterment of the story. And then it also, you know, I was setting him up that he's working for Tombstone. It also helps kind of pull those ties together, especially the way that Ben had sort of messed with that relationship between Peter and Tombstone. So we'll actually see some payoff for that also down the road, which is pretty exciting. So it kind of worked out well to go, oh, he functionally will work. Now I have a weapon against symbiotes. And also it helps for the tapestry that we've already kind of built of the underworld, you know.
I imagine it also helps when you're crafting something like this, and not that, you know, comics are always collaborative, but you work in a team with Man of Action. Charles Soule has been part of the Lucasfilm Story Group stuff for a really long time. Al is obviously like working on the Absolute stuff and in that kind of like writer's room as well. So what is that experience like for you when you're coming in and working with Al and Charles? I imagine that background helps you all converse.
I think so. I mean, I think almost everybody, I'll say like 95% of the people that get into comics, you have to realize that unless you can write and draw, you're collaborating immediately. Mm-hmm. And then if you're in the realm of mainstream books, you've got your editors, you've got the people that are shepherding these, you know, franchises, like you just know, like, okay, I am part of a machine. And, I've done that for a really long time, you know, and it's also how I was trained to screenwrite way back in the day at NYU, where it was like the guys who taught me how to write were, they try to foster this kind of like ego right size where you go, you have to do a great job. You have to build the perfect structure. But if you think of a house, you're building the foundation and you're building the framing, and then somebody else puts on the walls and somebody else picks the paint and somebody else hangs the windows. Like, you can just do this part. Somebody else is going to make it something else. And unless you're a one-man show, that's just how it is. So that always kind of kept me in the open to collaboration. Just hope everybody does well for themselves and that we're all kind of heading in the same direction. So then when I get into a writer's room, that's really easy for me. I very much enjoy it. I've been really lucky too. Like these last bunch of Marvel summits that we've gone to, and anytime, you know, working with Alan Charles, there are no, like, we call them assassins. Like, there's nobody who sits in the room and just like waits for you to have an idea just so they can shit on it. Like, that doesn't happen. It's been really supportive, which is really nice. So yeah, having that background is very helpful if somebody's going to work in, you know, at Marvel or DC on one of these big franchises, because it's going to happen. Like, you can't avoid it.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
We got a couple of other questions here popping up in the comments. I want to get to some of those. Gary Rom says, is there any connection between the character Torment and the McFarlane Torment story, or is it just some badass name for a villain?
As far as I know, badass name. That was it. We liked the idea. We wanted a big, scary name. So,
yeah. One of the things that we talked about a little bit when we were getting into the Death Spiral storyline is this need of, like, Venom was introduced as the anti-Spider-Man, the bad Spider-Man, and then everybody loved him so much that he became an anti-hero. And now Carnage, you're kind of having the same thing. So did you sort of look as Torment as being like, oh, Carnage is now attached to Eddie Brock, we got to come up with an even worse Carnage?
Yeah, you totally have to do that. I mean, yeah. You have to come up with, like, as, because again, like we were saying before, these characters do migrate, right? Mm-hmm. They shift.
Yeah. And,
you know, is there a gravitational pull to for Venom to be bad? Is there, you know, will Carnage always be the same? You know, some of them, I think the answer is yes. Some of them is no. It's hard to say.
So you're like, in 5 years, Torment's going to be the biggest hero in Marvel Comics.
It might be on Spidey and his amazing friends.
little Team Torment.
Yeah, he's cute. He just spins around and falls down.
that's sort of all of their thing.
Yeah, so we just thought, like, oh, it'd be very fun to, you know, how dark a character can we come up with? And you know, the way these things get put together sometimes, it is like we had kind of an idea. We were trying to cook up a promo piece. Like, we didn't even have the whole story figured out yet, because that's just how it goes sometimes. When something came up with Spirals, and something came up, what if it was three Spirals and da-da-da, because we have three villains. And that's how the idea of the sort of familial connections came in, that this is a psychopath who takes out your extended family and moves closer and closer and closer to build up your torment, you know? So,
You do such a great job of, like, jumping into people's heads, like, getting their voice down. I feel like when I pick up your books, like, it's so impressive the way that you can get, like, Deadpool's voice down, Spider-Man's voice down, thanks. Four Eyes, all these other amazing, great characters that you created. Are there some heads that you really love being inside of and kind of playing around? Are there some that are scary or you don't like? How do you kind of jump into these characters and kind of take over so well?
Oh, thanks. I wish I had an answer. I mean, I appreciate that. From early on, like, my part of how I got my first job was dialogue. You know, like, when we were doing this Stan Hatton project at NYU, they saw that I sort of wrote punchy dialogue. So that was kind of what got me my first gig. I enjoy that part of it. I think I probably enjoy character more than plot. So it's just kind of how I'm hardwired, which I think is an asset for Spidey in general, because we do want the heart to come through, you know. But so I love, you know, I love doing Peter's, you know, internal monologue and being in his head. I really love writing Aunt May, because like the sassy, like, I'm physically old, but mentally incredibly young, you know, wise, but young. I love that character.
I got to say, I think you've dialed up her sass a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Joe. I think you're turning up May, and that's good.
I definitely have dialed up the sass. And I love it. I enjoy that. But I think it's one of my favorite parts. I mean, it's the bombastic visuals and all that. That's always going to be fun. I mean, the candy is always fun, but it's the heart and it's the characters. I think I lose myself in the most, you know, because plot, I can get tripped up, you know, but characters, easier path to follow.
Well, but especially working on something like this crossover, I feel like the character stuff pops so much harder in a thing where you can see the interlocking plot so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, not to bring it back to Mary Jane, but like the meetup they had in that last issue, I think last week, between Peter, where they were sort of coming clean, I was like, oh, this is the relationship. This is the rom-com. This is how they start a new relationship, because they're on equal, if not Mary Jane is sort of a better hero than Peter is right now, especially him coming back from space. I'm like, this is how we win. This is how we win, Pete.
Please. I don't know. I'm Team Ray, guys.
So. Oh, yeah, come on.
Thank you.
We got a couple more of the comments here. This is from Alex Sanchez. Loved your work on I Kill Giants when I was younger. Made me a lifelong fan. Besides Spider-Man, would you ever want to write another title besides it? Or does Spider-Man take up all your time?
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. I mean, Giants is so close to my heart. It always makes it an impact when I know somebody's found it. So thank you. There's definitely other stuff I want to do. I mean, I'm going to do another book for Ken Nomura. We did Immortal Sergeant a couple of years ago, and I learned not to wait 15 years between books. So I will do that soon. He's working on a project of his own that I'm actually going to theoretically edit for him.
Awesome.
It's not going to need any editing. He's a great writer. So I'm just there to be a backstop. But I want to do another book for him. There's always other little projects that are sort of bubbling up. I have some ideas that I'd like to get back to. But Spidey, because of the nature of it being, you know, twice a month, is a pretty big lift. And then there's always the what other kind of Man of Action stuff are we doing that bubbles in as well. So right now it's a pretty, it's a great job. It's super fun. It takes up a lot of time and that's okay. It's sort of the bridge to whatever comes next. And if I find out I have a little extra time, then there will be more comics in there.
Right. This is from Superior Comment. And I'll give a little explanation about this in a second. Are there any plans for Doc Ock in the future? I know we will get something in Spider-Gwen then. Also going to recommend Spider-Man Octo-Girl to Mr. Kelly. It's good. The explanation is we had Dan Slott on a couple of weeks back, and this commenter was bringing up Octo-Girl, and Dan Slott refused to read it, completely refused. So he's trying again with you, is the idea.
Oh, no. Is that a... Is that the manga or is it the...
It's a manga, I believe, about Doc Ock putting his brain doing the Superior Spider-Man thing, but with a teen schoolgirl.
Perfect. nothing uncomfortable about that.
No notes.
Perfect.
Amazing. I'm not familiar, but maybe I'll research it later. And yes, there will definitely be Doc Ock. I mean, I love Doc Ock. I really feel like Superior Spider-Man was such a huge swing and it loomed so large in that history that even, I don't even know how many years ago that was, I feel like there's still a cool down necessary. Like it was so big and it was such a big swing. That being said, I do absolutely want to get to him.
Awesome.
This, I think we touched on already, but from Omega Arrow, are there any big plans for Norman Osborn and the Green Goblin, either in issue 1000 or in general main plans?
Well, we've definitely got, Norman's definitely doing stuff, you know, he's busy. I'm pretty sure that the side project has been announced.
Spider-Versity?
Spider-Versity. Yeah. So, you know, nice. Norman's continuing his sort of attempts to be better. He knows he's not a great Spider-Man, but one thing he's really good at is kicking the crap out of spiders. And so it occurs to him that he could have killed those spider kids easily. And maybe they need to toughen up. And so it's time to take them to school. So that's been a really fun project. And Jordan is doing an incredible job on that. It's been really great. And there will definitely be more Norman in the future. I would not say that he is specifically in 1000, but he's around. I really like him as part of the cast. I think he represents all of that stuff about Peter that we love. Like, I'll give people a shot at redemption. I have a long history, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, Norman's the broken version of that. So we want to keep him around.
Yeah.
Bad.
This is a hot button one we've got here from Captain McGlue. Considering the current state of the world, what does Joe think when he looks back on the President Luthor storyline?
You know, it's so funny. We used to be allowed to do a lot more politics, quite frankly, than we can kind of do now. And we were able to do some fun stuff in that time period. Kind of regardless of where you fall on the spectrum. I mean, we had decided to do that Lex thing before there, like, we just wanted it to time out with the election. Obviously we didn't know who would win. so we just thought, oh, this would be cool. And then that opened a big can of worms, but
American society.
It was pretty much it. It was our comic.
Yeah.
Just sort of laid the groundwork.
That was the tipping point. Oh, that's
exactly.
But, you know, there was a book somebody helped me to task about once where it was like, essentially it was, you know, Lex had declared a war and, you know, had very sketchy evidence as to why we were going to war. And every time people would sort of challenge him on it, they got disappeared, basically. And it was a Justice League story, and it turned out to all be a dream. And it's like, oh, wouldn't that be terrible if you couldn't speak your mind and all that kind of stuff.
You said it ended with it being a dream, you said, though, right?
Yeah.
Wow, it ended with it being a dream.
Interesting.
Wake up.
Did they know to wake up? Yeah.
Well, I think it was after everybody was gone. It was really, we got to take a swing at some of that stuff. I think we actually got called Rat of the Week on, like, Joe Scarborough back when he played for the other team. It was very funny. But I don't know. People, I get why some people don't want to wade into that stuff. I get why the readers, too, depending on your not even your proclivity in terms of like what you believe politically, but some people just want to like check out, right? They want to read the comics and just see a big adventure and have good versus evil. I do think there's a middle ground, and I try to the best of my ability to weave in things that I think are pertinent without beating people over the head with it. You know, it's a fine line. I think obviously if you're doing an indie book, do whatever you want. I mean, then the gloves are off. But you know, when I think as long as you're not doing something that violates the character and feels like it's a few steps removed from reality, you know, it's a lot of fair game. I think that's been a lot of what the stories that I am doing are about, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff about consolidation of power and strength and what does it mean to be strong. And so trying to have Peter lead by example and maybe screw up, right? Like what happens if I pursue the wrong kind of strength? Having a character like Hellgate, that's just like, if you're not strong, you're nothing.
Yeah.
That for me is like abstract enough to go, well, maybe you'll apply that to your life and see that in the world, or maybe it's just a cool villain who beats the crap out of Spidey. You know, let the reader make that decision.
Well, what you said is when we started talking was like, you can't help but, you know, put it in. Like, we're all out here living. It's like, what's a villain to you right now? I have some ideas, and I'm going to take some of them and put them into this work I'm working on, you know?
For sure. You really, it's very challenging to not do that, because I feel like, also, you know, in fairness, that's how we as readers, if you, you know, it depends on when you picked up a comic, but I feel like Marvel Comics especially, that's the DNA. You know, like you go back and you look at those old Spidey books, and to have Spider-Man involved with stories about protests on college campuses, and you know, that
was irreverent.
Stuff. Yeah.
Captain America punching Hitler is like, he was a world leader. Like, that's a thing. That's politics. And like, you know, obviously in everything we know about all of this stuff is like, everyone's much more nervous about it all or overwhelmed from a reader point of view. Like, I can't have more of this in this thing that I used to. Well, you talk about, especially Pete talks about a lot, like, comics are how I get away from all these issues. Right. I can't have it there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I think that's perfectly fair. You know, like, the parts that are inherent in superhero comics are what's, like, clear moral value, right? Like, what's stuff that is just unassailably good versus evil.
Right, yeah.
And to the degree that some stuff from the world finds itself in there, I think as long as it falls into that and it's more that than opinion, I think you can walk that line. But I get it. It's like I've said this before, during the pandemic, which was rough on everybody, but it was the first time in my life where, you know, I had a sense of lack of control and fear, and where I was really like, I was bedridden for a couple of weeks from depression. Like, it really freaked me out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like, my family had never seen me like that before. And around that time, my son had introduced me to to My Hero Academia. And it was just like hope on the TV, right? Just watching these kids want to be the best hero. Like, that was it. And I was fine. And that got me through some dark stuff. Right. So it's beautiful to have that. And I don't think of it as like escapism in terms of like, oh, you've turned your back on the real world or your head's in the sand or any of that stuff. I think we all need to take a breath, right? And we need to get recharged in the way that we feel is fun for us. So if comics are that for people, I think that's great. And I would never want to steal that from somebody to push some, you know, here's my very spelled out pedantic agenda. I don't think that's helpful.
Well, I think that might be a good tee up for another project you're working on that I wanted to ask you about, which is Ben 10 coming back in comic book form. I know you're not writing the initial arc with Dynamite, but as far as they've described it, it's sort of like absolute Ben 10 or ultimate Ben 10. maybe that's just them selling it. But what can you tell us about it? And I know you guys are kind of writing it around, is that right?
Yeah, we're all taking different turns. Joe Casey started, he kicked it off. It's really fun. It's definitely, I wouldn't say, you know, it falls into this place that's sort of between, it's a slightly more mature version, but it's not like, oh, here's our overly muscular on steroids then. You know, it's like a modern, it's a modernized.
He doesn't
version.
Pull out a 10 that's actually an axe on his chest.
Yes, exactly. it's a Glock. It's a really exactly. right to gun.
I got Teddy said of them.
Anyway, but he, I mean, it looks outstanding. I mean, it's a little bit of a grittier art style, I think. I think that's kind of a surprise for people, but it's so cool. Like, it feels really modern. It has a lot of texture to it. The aliens look dope. Like, it's just fun. So cool. I think it'll, for, you know, again, this is what I was saying before. It's funny to think of it for something as new as Ben 10, but it's like people want their new thing and they want the old thing at the same time. Right.
Yeah, so exactly.
It is trying to thread that needle. And I think successfully, you know, in a way that's going to be fun. And if somebody's new to Ben, it gets to be sort of their Ben 10, which is what we've always had. Every time there was another iteration of the show, the older fan was like, I don't like the new one. And then the new fan is like, this is awesome. You know, like, it happened every single time. And now we'll get to have that happen again in comics. So yeah, it's very fun and happy to, you know, be back with that gang. It's nice to see those characters again.
Well, what is it like for you guys? I mean, you've reinvented it a couple of different times, like you're saying, but to take something that you wholesale created and return to it and be like, okay, let's kind of wash that away a little bit and revisit this in a different format.
It's actually, I would say, pretty complicated. And because there are four of us, we all have a different sense of that, right? I think. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Some of the guys might be more comfortable than others with going like, all right, let's go back to the roots. And then some of us might want to go like, oh, well, what if we followed him up and aged him up more? Like, there's, I think we all have a different kind of take. And the way that we tend to work together is we sort of let these things mill around, and eventually the better idea rises to the top. You know, nice. It's not exactly majority rules. It's kind of a weird alchemy. It's kind of hard to explain it, but we've done it for so long. It's like working with your brothers. You guys know. I mean, it really is. Like, you guys have been together for as long as I think we have. And
just as productive.
So, yeah. So it's, for me personally, it's anything that gets more bend to people is cool.
Yeah.
Like, and not in the like, oh, I want to pay off college way. Like, the show ran not, and you know, like, we're the creators. I'm proud of everything that we've done. Many great people worked on those shows and kept them alive, you know, and had a lot more, you know, Dwayne McDuffie alone had more to say about Ben 10 for certain periods of time than we did. So,
right.
You know, it's very, you know, I find that very humbling, and I really appreciate all the work that everybody's done with Ben 10. But it ran for 15 years because of that. I mean, that's crazy when you picture that, right? Like, especially a kid's show. So to get a 15-year run and then be like, okay, now it's just going to evaporate because of shenanigans, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't pretend to understand the streaming wars and the buying of companies and why we would take really, really lucrative franchises off the air. Like, I don't understand, including Looney Tunes and all the other things that they just ditched. So it was just great to have an opportunity then to go, okay, well, we all miss Ben and Gwen and Max. Let's have some more adventures and see what happens. And it's crazy. Like, the audience is out there, which is awesome. Like, I'll be very curious to see the overlap of that audience with comics, you know, like, just what that means for how the book does. Because I never know. I'd never leave my house. I have no idea. but I think it'll be cool. Like, Steve Siegel was just saying the other day, he's got this really cool Ben 10 t-shirt. It's just got the Omnitrix symbol in the middle. And anytime he wears it, it's like his travel hoodie. So if he wears it to an airport, he's like, easily four or five people, Ben 10, will just yell. They don't know who he is.
They just are happy.
See the symbol?
Yeah.
That's it, you know? And that's really fun. It's fun that it's people in their 20s and men and women. It's awesome. You know, it's such a great thing. So I'm hoping that this book will scratch the itch for some people and kind of get it back out there for them.
Just a random thought based on what you said a few minutes ago about how My Hero Academia was that joy and hope for you. And you're describing that people reacting to Ben 10 in that way. So you were giving that to other people in that same way. So that's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it is that is the most kind of humbling thing. You know, I was just telling a friend recently that when I was, I don't know, 20 something knucklehead, I didn't know what I was doing with myself. I mean, I drank my way through college. I had a philosophy degree. I was like, I have no clue what's happening here. And my older brother, who was a Marine, was like, I think you should write a 5-year plan and 10-year plan, and let's just see what happens. And I wrote this thing out, and it was when I think I was getting ready to go back to school to go to NYU for writing. Maybe it was right after that. And I was writing down these things like, oh, maybe one day I would like my own comic book, and maybe one day it'd be cool to make a cartoon. And one of the things that was in there was like, create a beloved property, right? Which is like the most preposterous thing you can.
That's so funny.
There's no universe, right, where you can predict that or make it happen. Like, I mean, how many people are generating things every single day? And Ben 10 hitting is as much luck as anything else. I mean, right. Like, all, not taking away from anybody who worked on it, but you can look throughout history and go, why did this thing work and this thing didn't? Sometimes it was just timing, right? We were the right place, right time, with the right stuff. And then to go, yeah, and people love it. It's a wild thing, and I'm very, very proud of it, and proud for the guys, and proud for everybody who's ever worked on it. So it is special.
Just send us over your current 5-year plan. I want to just get a quick
It's how to do a lot less.
That's like, yeah, nice. So you're on the other side of it. You're like, yeah, exactly. Shut it
I'm
down.
Like, I want to ride motorcycles, build gunpla, like I want to do stupid nerd stuff.
Well, very similarly, just to sort of wrap up here, and I think you've been addressing this anyway, my research may be wrong. Tell me if my research is wrong. But I believe this summer, on July 24th, is the 30th anniversary of your first published work in comics, which was 2099 World of Tomorrow number 1. That came out, I believe, July 24th, 1996. Wow. So
very close, yeah.
Okay. We've been talking around this anyway, but like, what at this point keeps you with comics? What keeps you coming back to comics 30 years later?
Oh yeah. No, well, thanks. And it is, my literal first thing was, it wasn't the 2099 universe, but it was the Fantastic Four 2099. Okay. That was just dialogue over Carl Kiesel. But yeah, that the 2099 book I did with Ben Rabb, that was my first ongoing. 30 years. Yeah.
Look what you've done. Yeah, it's too much. Like, oh, I know, he's overwhelming.
It's amazing, consider I'm only 35. I mean, it's one of the best mediums, period. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's on so many levels, right? Like, I've always loved the fact that the reader, you know, like, sure, people read on their phones now. It's a little different. But if you go and physically buy the book, it is such an intimate experience, right? It's very personal. Yeah. It's not the same as movies. It's not the same as TV. The collaboration, like we talked about before. If I wanted to just write by myself, I'd write novels. Like, that's never been of interest to me. I've always wanted to tell stories with other people. Comics does that in a really fast turnaround. Like, it's not as fast as it used to be. I mean, there used to be times at Marvel where I would write a script and it would show up on the stands in under 3 months. Like, that's how fast, because the deadlines were nuts. But it's fast. Like, you write a thing and 6 months later it's on the stands and you're getting art, you know, 2 weeks later. I mean, it's an incredible creative dynamo, because I'm getting fed, like, right now, just by nature of how it works on Spidey, I'm working with 4 different people and sort of leapfrogging the stories.
Right.
So I'm nonstop getting like exceptional art from exceptional artists all the time, right? And then so I get to go like, holy crap, that looks so good. And now what's the next part of that story? And it just keeps the fuel, you know, going. Where we've worked on, you know, Man of Action has worked on animation for a really long time, video games. You could work on something for years and wait and wait and wait, and maybe it shows up, maybe it doesn't. And even the ones you know are coming, it's not till a year later. You write an animation script, you see it a year later. It's a different process. So comics, you know, they're the foundation of my career. I still love them as a fan. Manga's become huge in my life, you know, not in no small part due to my son, because I was already a manga fan, but he introduced me to a lot of different things that I would have been dismissive of, honestly, back in the day. Like, One Piece was not something I was going to pick up. He's like, you know, Dad, I really think you should try it. And, you know, now I'm caught up. Like, I read them all.
Wow.
Cool. It's a great story. Incredibly well told. It's very special. But the thing that drove me to try it, which I would offer to you guys, is that it is the only story that has been running for 25 years by the same creator that we know is going to end soon.
Right.
Soonish. I want to be there for the end. Like, I want to, I want to be there on that journey.
Yeah.
It's a really cool, it's a cool feeling. I don't know if it's going to happen again in our lifetime, you know, something like that. So, you know, the medium, the connection to the audience, we're also the only industry that really has a direct one-on-one fan connection. And as much as, you know, we're joking about Pete wants to kill me because I don't have Mary Jane married, and I understand it.
We're not joking about that.
Oh, no, I know. The doors are locked.
Yeah. Good.
But I, you know, even though there's that, there can be that tension around these characters, at the end of the day, like, we go to comic conventions and we talk to people, you know, like, you get to meet the people who read your stuff. Like, it's really cool. It's very special. And I'm lucky as hell to get to do it as a living. It's really, it's been an incredible ride. So the fact that it's 30 years is awesome. You know, I'm very proud of it, and I feel lucky.
You should be, man. It's glorious to read your work and to get to kind of, you know, when you talk about that heart and that hope, you know, Spider-Man is that. So the fact that you're working on it is really powerful and well-earned. So thank you for all that you do and continue to do. It's a pleasure reading your stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. And if you have the voodoo doll of me, you just take out one pin.
He's going to take out one.
Well, you know what you got to do to get that pin removed.
Oh, okay.
You just jammed into his router.
Yeah, seriously. But thank you. I appreciate it. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, and we appreciate you, Joe. Before we let you go, real quick, obviously people should be checking out Amazing Spider-Man. Looking forward to the Ben 10 thing happening from Dynamite. Yeah. Anything else people should check out?
Well, at the end of the year, if you happen to be one of the few people that has an Oculus, we did the Deadpool VR game.
Oh, that's
super fun. I was one of the writers on that, and I think it's a really good time if you can handle VR, which I can't always do. Man of Action has also been working on a video game called No Law, and they just showed the ad for that at the Game Awards. That's coming out sometime very late this year, or maybe everybody in video games is terrified to release their game opposite Grand Theft Auto 6. Literally nobody knows when any game is coming out, because it's like, it can't be near GTA.
That's really funny.
That'll be in a little bit, and then we're always pecking at stuff. And in just a few months, you know, in September, Spider-Man 1000, which I just happen to be the lucky guy that's
huge
in the driver's seat at this time. It's going to be so good. I'm really excited about it. It looks fantastic. I mean, I am that far ahead for some of these things. Like I said, I leapfrog around for the different story arcs. So that's coming down the pike. And obviously Death Spiral right now, there's more bodies to come. There's a lot more chaos in Peter, Mary Jane, and Eddie's future. So I encourage people to check it all out. And it's been so much fun to work with Charles and Al. They're great. So it's been amazing all around.
Really good.
Yeah. Awesome. Really fun. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. Good seeing you.
Great
again.
to catch up.
Chatting. And
thank you,
hopefully it won't be such a long time until the next time we have.
Yes.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you guys so much.
Good luck
Thanks
out
for
there.
Me. Take care.
Bye, Joe.
Bye-bye.
All right, there we go. Joe Kelly, once again.
Oh, man.
Check out all this stuff. I'll give you some specific plugs. The Amazing Spider-Man Death Spiral storyline is going on right now. Amazing Spider-Man 23 just came out, and 24 is coming out March 18th. This is a 9-part storyline, so you can get it, I believe, weekly going through Venom and Spider-Man, and it is great so far. Should have written down when the Ben 10 comic is coming out, but look for that from Dynamite as well as everything else.
In the future.
In the future.
And if you're looking for a good graphic novel, I Kill Giants is just legendary. So
I should have mentioned, I completely forgot this until you just said that, but the other day my son was like, I saw a trailer for some movie that was based on a comic book. And I was like, that's not helpful. And then it's
many years ago, maybe.
And I was like, I Kill Giants? And he was like, yes. How did you know that? And I was like, well, let me tell you a story.
Well, we've talked about it for 15 years, son.
So, yeah, there you go.
Oh, man.
Folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments and we'll get to it. It can be about absolutely anything. And what are you guys drinking tonight? Justin, I believe you're drinking dog barks. Is that correct?
Oh, yum, yum. That's the ultimate high. Low. I was drinking a little, instead of gin and tonic, gin and guava Jarritos.
Ooh. Nice. Oh, how's that?
Very good. Very
Did
good.
You little put little the sauce. Gin directly in the Jarritos bottle?
Oh, no, that's a great idea, Alex. I'm going to do that. For our next podcast.
What are you, just taking swigs of each?
No, I did this crazy thing where I mixed it in a glass. You know?
Oh, weird.
Like there are these rooms where you go and there's a guy or a girl there doing it for you, you know?
Well, yeah, I do it myself, so I wouldn't know about that.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Sorry, you live in the country. So in the cities, people gather.
Huh.
Just in general. And so that's like a bar.
Yeah. It's like a lot of huts all piled on top of each other.
Yeah. It's like a barn where it's with humans instead of animals in it. You know?
Oh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really cool. You would love it because you spend so much time in your barn.
Pete, what are you drinking?
A little daytime. You know what I mean?
Oh, Lagunitas. Yes, there we go. We've got a couple of questions coming up here. This is from Gary Rom. What's the over-under on Spider-Man 1000 variant covers? 30? I think if they don't do 1,000 variant covers, they've missed a bet there. That's what they
can
do.
Yeah, it'll be more than 30. I would take the over on that one. Yeah.
Wow, you think more than 30? Holy crap.
They've been doing, doing 30 for like this DC Marvel crossovers. They're going to do so many.
Yeah.
Wow. So many. Gotta collect them all.
Yeah, got to catch them all.
You have to collect
them. Yeah, you have to.
Schreikler says, what did he... Oh, this is a sad question, potentially.
Schreikler, you bastard.
Schreikler just pointing out how unaccomplished we are. Thanks, bro.
The question is, what did you want to do 30 years ago, either things you eventually did or things you still haven't gotten around to?
Get my driver's license.
Kill like Pete and or Justin. Yeah.
Hey, don't read my list.
I'm the youngest member of this group, so why don't you guys go first to give us the skateboard American graffiti 30 version.
30 years ago. You know, I was thinking earlier today, I was definitely like on a track 30 years ago to be working in a theater full time and working in like either off-Broadway or Broadway. That's not happening. Yeah.
That would have been wild to somehow encounter each other in different offshoots of our lives.
Well, yeah, if I could go back in time, I would walk over to Cornell and stalk Alex for sure. You know,
stalk Alex?
Yeah, what would that accomplish?
I'd be like, hey, man, we're going to be doing a podcast for 30 years together, bro. I just wanted to see what you're up to over there.
Podcast.
Wow, that's really funny. You want to have been podcasting for longer is your dream.
I'd be like, first of all, I don't know what a podcast is. Second of all, I can't understand your Ithaca College guttural slurring. Yeah.
Oh, hey, man. I would have punched you in the face.
Sir, you sound like Sling Blade. Can you please take the
I would have murdered you before we could have even created the podcast. That wouldn't have been good.
Yeah, Cornell, what are you doing? I went to college as a chemistry major, so that would have been a different world. I certainly wouldn't be wearing this shirt and talking to you guys.
Let's see, another question from Derek. When's Alfred coming back? Enough already.
Yes, someone's finally said it.
Here, you know what? Here's the thing. I agree with you. I would have expected him back by now, but how do you bring back Alfred? Like, bringing back Batman, Time Bullet, Superman, like, it all makes sense. Alfred, he literally just has to walk out of a closet and be like, I actually am alive. No more questions.
No follow-ups.
Well, because like, what quest is there going to be to revive the butler?
I mean, I think...
How dare you? He is so much more than
this
a
is
butler.
Not the reason they are doing this, but spoilers for the end of DCKO. If anybody hasn't read it, turn away. But they're clearly heading in a year's time into like absolute crisis. So I don't think they're going to do a full reboot of DC Comics at this point because everything's going so well. But I do think they'll do a soft reboot, the sort of thing where it's like, oh, and Alfred's back alive. And this thing has changed a little bit and other things. So if they want to, that's the opportunity.
I think you're right. It makes sense for a line-wide thing to bring him back because unless they did like a real father, they got into the father nature, father-son relationship that Batman has with Alfred. But I feel like they've been doing so much Thomas Wayne stuff. It's just a little convoluted with the continuity. And so I don't know. It's dicey.
Or just do a Lazarus bit, right? Like that's the easy way of doing it.
There you go.
He's been dead for way too long to just toss him in the old
pool.
Here's
the thing. In the
90s
or early 2000s.
Right out and just said, I'm back. Comics. I think, you know.
In the 90s or 2000s, they 100% would have had a like 90-part crossover called Alfred Quest. Where they had to resurrect Alfred with a Lazarus pit, and it was a whole thing.
Yeah, but he had no soul or something. He was evil.
Right, exactly. Evil butler. He was like, here's your cucumber sandwich, sir. And Bruce is like, oh, there's no cucumbers. It's just bread.
The sandwiches are warm and the soup is cold.
Have you not heard of panini and... Never mind. Gazpacho. Candid Melissa LG say, do any of you watch anime? If so, what do you like? Pete loves perving out to anime. Take it away, Pete.
Yes.
Hey, how dare you, sir?
No, describe any of the anime you watch.
Well, I don't think it's that pervy. I've been watching the Dan.
Yeah, real quick, describe the plot of that. How does that kick off?
Yeah, don't want to do that. Don't want to start with the start. Yeah, I almost walked away. Stray Bullies had to talk me down. He was like, no, keep watching. Been watching that. What else have I been watching? Oh, my God. I've been...
Sakamoto Days.
Sakamoto Days, for sure. One Piece is back, the live action. I've seen 1.5 episodes of that, so that's been a nice, fun addition to my day-to-day.
I don't know if that counts as anime. But
Manga to live action. I don't watch a ton, but I have been told by many that like it is such a great antidote to the repetitive nature of a lot of shows, and it's a nice mental break. So, gonna give it a shot.
Yeah, I haven't really watched a lot either. I've been getting more into reading manga since I got the Crunchyroll manga app, but I haven't made the leap to anime quite yet.
I mean, the closest thing I watched was now a year and a half ago, whenever it came out, but Blue Eyed Samurai.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I loved.
Yep. This is from ERV Henderson. What superhero or villain would be most likely to attend Cornell? I will say, first off, definitely a villain. If you've seen any movies or TV shows, the either jerk or villain or something like that always goes to Cornell every single time. So
the answer is Alex.
You ever thought about that now that you're saying it out loud?
Maybe. Could be.
School of villains.
But is there a fictional superhero or villain who would go to Cornell?
I mean, it strikes me as, especially in the current continuity of Lex Luthor being in Smallville, like him going to like a liberal arts college like that makes a lot of sense.
I could see the leader going, MODOK. Who's got a giant head and is a fucking evil son of a bitch?
Jesus Christ. All right.
Big heads?
Yeah.
Easy reader, we're moving on. What do you guys think of Mike Richardson leaving Dark Horse? I don't know if people know this story, but to lay it out real quick, as simply as possible, I'm blanking on the name of the company, but Mike Richardson is the guy who founded Dark Horse back in 1986. He has been with the company ever since. In 2022, I want to say, he sold it to, and this always goes well, a venture capital firm that mostly owns video game companies.
No notes.
He stayed on as CEO until last week when the way they phrased it is Mike Richardson was out at Dark Horse, and they didn't say he was fired or anything like that, but that's what that means when you read that in the newspapers.
And man, financial people can't talk about anything unless they use their terms. It's like, out at a comic book company? That's not the way we talk.
No. But kind of even to tip my hand a little bit to make it seem even worse, since they do have gaming companies, apparently there was a gaming exec who was really vying for Mike Richardson's job, got his job as interim CEO, and the guy only has video game experience and no experience with Hollywood, despite the fact that they're really looking to pivot into pushing IP. So it seems bad all around. I don't know. I'd throw them. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think the beginning end of that is venture capitalist. The vibe of having someone who had been there for that long, that bothers. That's anti-mission statement for a lot of venture capitalists, which is always very forward-looking. Like, what's the next thing? How can we shake this up to make more money on it? Which is feels crazy to put that on a comic book company, especially if the real way to make money is through IP. And to go in a different direction feels very strange.
Yeah. I mean, that said, for the foreseeable future, at least, we've talked to folks at Dark Horse and everything seems to be going as normal, but we'll see where we are in a year's time.
Yeah, time will tell.
And just to wrap up here, a couple of other anime recommendations. The Greater Good says Spy Family is great. My wife and son love that. I love the manga of that. So good. So funny. Oh, Straight Bullet says I've been watching Jujutsu Kaisen lately. Oh. So that's another recommendation. And we got a second for Sakamoto Days. Also, Christopher Sova suggests that Alfred joined the Court of Butlers.
Which, that's not a bad... He comes back as a Talon?
I love it. Yeah, let's make it happen. Alfred Quest. Come on.
Come out.
Come on.
30-part. 30 I mean...
30-part crossover.
Aggressive. Executioner's song. All the teams come together.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right, why don't we wrap up there and move on to our next section, which is trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online because they've been nice enough to sponsor us many years ago.
They're just a store. Peter, take the wheel. That's what we say whenever we turn it over to him.
And we just need a volunteer. Yep. Someone to say, hey, me.
We got a me from Holland. Hey, we Holland, got a me. Holland FJ.
Holland FJ.
There you go. Holland FJ. You
Holland.
Got it. Holland.
FJ, yeah, fuck J. Anyways, today's trivia is about the comic Usagi Yojimbo, Kato number 84, and a small nod to the legend John Forte, RIP. Thanks for all the musical work as well. All right, here we go, question number one. Where does this so far amazing comic, Usagi Yojimbo, Kato 84, take place? Is it A, Osaka, Japan in 1984, B, oh man, you should have seen it. I really had them going. Oh shit, C, Adam Cohen.
Really had them Cohen?
Yeah.
Huh.
Really had them going, Adam Cohen.
Interesting. And so, just to check, not to tip the head too much here, but Usagi Yojimbo Kaito 84 takes place in Osaka, not Kaito?
That's correct.
Hmm, interesting.
Kaito is a character.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. We actually talked to the team about it.
Yes,
this.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
That's how we know about it.
Yeah.
I forgot. I was asking a question. Congrats. Yeah. You got the question correct, Holland J4, whatever your name is.
All right, great. Question number two. What is the relic they are after in this so far terrific comic? Is it A, the evil blood spear? B, hey, Romeo, why don't you lasso me a beer? C, Romeo Galasso.
Galasso. The original name of Shakespeare's Romeo.
Yeah. Yeah, we all know that.
We all know that.
That's why you're classically trained.
Yeah. Forsooth, Romeo, Galasso. Oh, Romeo. Wherefore art thou, Galasso?
Wherefore art my bureau?
Yeah. A, is it A again?
A is correct. Here we go, last one. Who is writing this so far amazing comic with the legend Stan Sakai's blessing, of course? Is it A, Zach Rosenberg? B, oh, you think because you brutally murdered our boss, it makes you the Don? We'll see about that. Hey, Alexa, who's the new Don? See, Alexa Don.
Wow. Went around the long way for that one,
yeah,
huh?
Exactly. Yeah, sure did.
The long way around the barn. Yeah. Which, as we all know, is you can't spell barn without bar for That's animals.
Right. It's for the kick people. People on kick.
Yeah.
Kick.
Easy Reader wants to know if there are any option Ds.
But... As we know, Easy Reader, that only happens when Alex Zelbin isn't here.
Yeah. I am here. And the answer is A. Congratulations, Holland FJ.
Really good.
You Holland. Have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email, comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we will get that off to you. Pete, what is the secret movie you are teasing?
Of course, I'm talking about the 2019 award-winning movie, Hustlers.
Oh. Of course. Of course. Mm-hmm. Great movie. Yeah. All right, before we wrap up here, new comics are coming out tomorrow. What are we looking forward to that we haven't read yet, Pete?
Yeah, cannot wait to read Harley and Ivy, Life and Crimes number 4. Did someone say amazing fucking art, bro? Also, Dork number 2.
No one said anything yet.
Dork number 2, looking forward to this because the last issue was just such a cool vibe. And then, of course, as per mentioned, the Usagi Yojimbo Kato 84 number 1.
Great. Justin, what about you?
Very good question, Alex.
Yeah, Justin, what about you?
I'm looking forward to the Absolute Green Lantern number 12 is coming out. Mm-hmm. This was, I think, sort of one of the outsider Absolute comics, but it has slowly really worked its way, much like Absolute Flash. I think the story was developed when the others went so hard at the top. These were slower burns, but they've really come to find a place in my heart. So very much enjoying those. And you know I got to hype up the season's number 9 coming out from our guy Rick Remender and Paul Azaceta on art.
Oh, dude.
I've loved this series. I think the art's exciting. There was a big sort of occurrence at the end of last issue where I don't really know where this book is going to go from here, and that's always an exciting place, especially in a Rick Remender book where you know someone's going to feel bad.
Aww.
Bunch of stuff I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I am excited about X-Men United number 1. That's coming from Evel Ewing, who wrote Exceptional X-Men, who I know I was bigger on than you two guys, yes. But I was very big on it, so I'm excited to see what Eve does with this next book. Also, The Exorcism at Buckingham Palace, number 1.
I knew you were going to pick that.
The Exorcism at 1600 Penn was the first series, which, per the name, was about a demonic possession at the White House. This transports it to England. I am curious about, there's an artist change, so I'm curious to see how that affects it. But Hannah Rose May, who wrote the first book, is also writing this one. Which is pretty cool. And there was one more I wanted to give a shout out to. Godzilla versus America Portland number 1.
Yes, dude.
They've been doing these city-based Godzilla books and they've been so much fun. They're done with writers and artists who are only based in those specific cities.
Come on. Yeah.
Really enjoyed them so far. Great anthologies. So excited to see what happened.
What was the one? Was it Kansas City? A couple months back.
Yeah.
It is. It's like visiting the city. It's like great. A guidebook. And so I'm curious about the Portland one because there's a lot of character there. I wonder what you could go in a lot of directions. Roasting satire.
Sure.
I'm very curious too.
Yeah. So far it's been like, hey, here's a lot of inside jokes about our city. 50% of which I don't get because I don't live there. But
yeah. Avenue C.
Well, all of those and many more books are going to be at our Stack podcast that comes out Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Thank you so much to Joe Kelly for coming on.
Yeah,
don't forget to check out a little under-the-radar book called Amazing Spider-Man that he's working on right now. Next week, we are going to have back on the show, Tony Fleece is going to be here.
You got to be Tony Fleece and kidding me.
Just in time to talk about Deathstroke the Terminator coming out from DC Comics as part of their Next Level initiative. And also Feral number 21, which it's the silent issue, riffing off the classic G.I. Joe silent issue, but this time with cats. So that should be awesome. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, coming out Monday through Friday. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Yeah, ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night, folks.
your